and for the duration of the call, your lines will be on listen only. However, you will have the opportunity to ask questions via the webcast, as well as by pressing star one on your telephone keypad to register your question. I will now hand you over to your host, Bernard Gilly, to begin today's conference. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for attending our fiscal year 2020 financial results webcast. Before handing it over to Thomas Chidoin, our Chief Financial Officer, I just want to share with you a few of the events that make 2020 a fairly good year for Genesight. First and foremost, we were able to file for approval at the European Agency in September for Lunevoc, and filing was approved by the agency in October. We were also able to refinance the company through a PIPE at fall, which allows us to have a fairly decent runway going forward. And finally, we also have been morphing the company from being a pure R&D into a commercial organization, thanks to the temporary authorization of use that we have in France that we are able to invoice to the hospitals. Finally, we also had a set of clinical publications, clinical papers, that all take to show the efficacy and safety of Lumevoc. And we'll talk a little bit more about this with Margarita Hale, our Chief Medical Officer. Thomas, can you comment on the fiscal year results, please?
Sure. Thank you, Bernard. And good morning, everyone. There are basically two key messages to take away from these 2020 financial results. The first one is clearly the strong reduction of R&D expenses. We reduced it by 22% over 2019. And this was driven by mainly the two phase three trials, Rescue and Reverse for Lumevoc, that are pivotal in Europe, being completed at the end of 2019. So we've very much reduced the clinical development cost. But on the other hand, we continue to invest heavily in CMC. CMC activities are, as you know, the manufacturing and quality control activities around Lumevoc. We continue to invest heavily in these activities, which are absolutely key to support the EMA filing that is, as Bernard mentioned, currently undergoing review at the EMA, and to prepare as well for the BLA filing in the US that we expect later this year. So that's the first key message. The second one is that we were able to generate revenues in the amount of 4.4 million thanks to the temporary authorization for use that was granted in France for Lumevoc. The framework is quite simple. It's a sort of compassionate use or early access program like you have in other countries, but we are able to sell it for 700,000 euros per patient, and this is a request that has to come from a physician. So it's very similar to compassionate use, and it's for a very limited number of pre-approval drugs in France. So we've been able to generate these 4.4 million revenues. Now, the French authorities do not allow us to communicate proactively on the number of patients, given that the drug is not formally approved. So we are only reporting the sales numbers on a quarterly basis. And because of the fact that we don't know the final price we will obtain after our negotiation in a couple of years in France, we had to book, and I'm not going to be too technical, but it's important to understand, we had to book what we call a variable consideration under IFRS 15, which means that we have to make for a number of price scenarios to reflect the uncertainty on the final price. And because if this final price is slightly lower than the ATU price of 700,000, we would have to repay this small difference. and we have to take that into account when we book the revenues. So don't try to divide this 4.4 by 700,000 per patient. You will not get back to a round number. So that's just for you to understand. And this is why we don't communicate on the number of patients, because we cannot do that. So when you combine these two R&D expenses reduction and the revenues generated by Lumivoc in France, we were able to very much improve the operating cash burn by more than 46%, which is now reduced to only 15 million in 2020, where it was 28 million a year ago. So that's a big achievement for us. And unfortunately, this does not reflect in the net loss, which is impacted by a non-cash financial expense in 2020 related to the bond agreement we have with Kreos Capital in the UK. Again, not to be too technical, but it's important for you to understand why the net loss is not relevant to assess the performance. Basically, this bond agreement we signed at the end of 19 is made for two tranches. The one drew in December, the other one the last summer, for 6 and 4 million respectively. And they're made, both of them, up by roughly 70% of straight bonds that we will have to repay the bearing interest, and that we will have to repay in the course of the next 2 to 3 years, depending on the tranche. And 30% are convertible bonds. And of course, there are warrants attached to both tranches as well. So we recognize this agreement as a compound instrument under the current accounting rules. And last year, we conducted an extensive review of this rather complex agreement with Kreos, and we agreed that there was a number of optionalities which are absolutely trivial in the understanding of the agreement, but have an impact on the method we use to value the agreement. So we have to switch to what we call an embedded derivative instrument, which is very sensitive in its valuation, very sensitive to the share price. So that's for the technical part. And obviously, as the share price dramatically increased in 2020 by more than 3x, the valuation of this agreement increased a lot, and we have to recognize and book the variation of this valuation as per IFRS 9 as a financial expense. So to cut the long story short, this is purely a non-cash accounting financial expense that has nothing to do with the actual cash burn. We will never pay it, but it's impacting the net loss. So if we adjust the net loss and exclude this IFRS 2 and 9 non-cash, purely accounting expenses, we reduce this adjusted net loss by 23% in 2020, which is what you have to remind and what is important. So when we look at this reduction of R&D expenses last year and the generation of revenues, and we combine it to, as Bernard quickly mentioned, the 34 million refinancing transactions we were able to successfully conduct last year. And Bernard mentioned the pipe led by Arix, Invis, and Sofinnova for 25 million in October. But we were also able to obtain a loan in the context of the COVID in the summer that is backed by the state with a near zero interest rate for another 7 million. So that was very helpful at the time. With all that, we are entering 2021 and we'll be able to navigate through 2021 on very solid grounds. And from there, let's move on to the outlook on 2021.
Thank you, Thomas. And I'll obviously start with future commercialization of Lumivoc. Again, as I alluded to, we applied for market approval in September to the European Agency. The file was validated in October, and the file is being now assessed by the European Agency. We recently, by end of February, got to what we call the D120 clock stop, where we receive the first set of questions by the agency. Those questions were sent in due time. We are currently looking and are preparing the responses to these questions. But again, there was no unexpected questions. That's really in what we believe would be the comments and an additional remarks by the European Agency. We have until now in a 3 months period to prepare for these responses. And we, of course, are still expecting that the EMA decision will be in Q4 of this year. We also consider the regulatory pathway for the FDA approval. And as you know, we are now completing a phase 3 study. And I'll leave Margherita and our Chief Medical Officer take you through this.
So, as Bernard said, we have a phase 3 pivotal study called the REFLECT, which is ongoing and assesses Lumivox gene therapy in electroimplantation patients. So this study is conducted in close collaboration with the FDA, and it's under a special protocol assessment. We're going to get the primary results, the primary endpoint results of this phase 3 study in Q2 2021, so a few weeks from now. And the primary endpoint was set up 78 weeks post-treatment administration. We also have another program which is at early stage development. We have a phase 1-2 study called Pioneer, addressed to patients with retinitis pigmentosa. And the product is optogenetic. It combines gene therapy and a medical device. We'll get early findings from this first-in-human study in Q2 2021, and the larger preliminary results at the end of this year. And last but not least, we have compassionate use programs running in France, but not only. We have also individual compassionate uses in the US, and several patients were treated in 2020, and we have already some patients who were treated during 2021, and some patients are planned to be injected very soon. We also are putting in place compassionate uses in other countries in Europe, in Italy, in Germany, in Spain, and in the UK. Now I'm going to pause there, and I'm going to open the line for questions.
If you would like to ask a question or make a contribution on today's call, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. To withdraw your question, please press star 2. We currently have no questions coming through. But as a further reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 now. A question has been submitted. And our first question is coming from the line of Dylan Van Haften from Bryan Garnier. Dylan, your line is now unmuted.
Excellent. So good afternoon, everybody. So basically, 3 questions from my side, and obviously mostly on the list of questions. I understand you guys can't tell me everything, but you mentioned there were no real surprises. Could you maybe tell us some of the topics that were covered in the list of questions? And then secondly, what the impact might be for the ANSM court ATU, because it's my understanding that you filed and there's essentially that is in the air, and we could, you know, expect news from that anytime. And thirdly, on the timeline, I presume this gives you some wiggle room to make the fourth quarter readout as planned. Will you be updating the market if the timeline is pulled forward because you essentially, you know, meet because you essentially don't need the full time allocated by the clock stop? Thanks.
Yeah, so I cannot give you the list of questions, of course. Essentially, the questions that have been sent by the European Agency are on the 3 main actions of the filing, the CMC and the quality assurance, the clinical and the preclinical. Again, nothing that we were not expecting
vaccine has come out and remarked by the FDA, by the European agency. So it's nothing that we cannot trust and nothing that we cannot prepare to satisfy the European agency.
For the ATU magnetic, can you take this?
Sure. So for the cohort ATU, as you know, the cohort ATU is more an administrative process, because when you compare with the nominative ATU, now we have a very smooth process and the patients can be treated rapidly because the French agency is really responsive for each patient. What is planned right now from the French agency is that they're going to evaluate the cohort ATU in parallel with the ongoing review, and we don't have any timelines for their response for now.
And just on the final bit, maybe I missed it, but essentially the if there's no surprises in the list of questions, you know, potentially you have some room to, you know, maybe even have news from the EMA before the fourth quarter.
We will for the moment stay with our expectation of the fourth quarter. I think we, as you know, this is the very first list of questions. We may have further and we need to really be very careful with our assessment. So we will remain conservative and think about a Q4 response for the European agency.
And then maybe just a final one. Do you have sort of any idea if there's going to be a sort of a scientific advisory board or a panel with experts?
Yes. So what's happening, the process is quite similar to the FDA. But we can have regular meetings with the DMA to discuss some specific points, and this is in a regular process, and it's quite easy to set up these meetings, and this is planned by our regulatory team.
Excellent. Thank you very much for taking my questions.
We currently have no further questions coming through, but as a further reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star one now.
In the meantime, we have a couple of questions from the webcast. The first one is, did you already inject a German patient with Lumevoc? How is it possible with ATU in France only? Magali, maybe you want to talk about the expanded access program in the other countries?
Yes, absolutely. So the process in Germany, yes, patients were already injected, German patients, through compassionate use. But as you know, we put in place German compassionate use. These patients were injected in France because of timing. You know, it's a very acute disease. And we really need to focus on patients so we could find out a solution to have them treated. But right now we are submitting a request to the German authorities to have a compassionate use in Germany. It's a cohort compassionate use. And usually it takes 1 or 2 months to get the feedback. And as soon as everything is in place, of course, German patients will be treated in Germany through this compassionate use.
We have another question on the webcast. It's related to GS30. We've been waiting for a long time. First results. I guess this investor is talking about the Pioneer early findings, and now it is postponed from Q1 to Q2. Is there a problem? So just very quickly on the timing, before I give the floor to Magali, we were expecting these early findings late Q1, and in total transparency, it was March, and we are now expecting it in the course of April. So it's a few weeks of delay, and Magali, do you want to elaborate on that? But I think it's a very small delay, and there is no problem.
Yeah, no, there is absolutely no problem. Our paper is under revision, and you know, sometimes you have 2 or 4 weeks delay according to the review. So there's absolutely no issue on that.
And we have one last one on Reflect. Can you please explain the difference you expect to see in the two arms of the Reflect study and what hurdle is required for the SPA?
Yes, absolutely. So we powered the trial to get a difference between the two arms. As you know, one arm patients are bilaterally treated with the active drug and the other arm unilaterally treated. So while discussing with the FDA, the difference has to be at least 15 letters between the two arms. But of course, we have also other analyses in the statistical analysis plan. And the whole package will be reviewed by the FDA. And as soon as we get the results of this study, which is the pivotal study for the US, we'll be meeting the FDA for to discuss the results.
We have no further questions in the queue. But as a final reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your keypad now. There are no further questions, so I will hand you back to your host, Bernard Gilly.
But Bernard, we have one last question. Sorry, just coming from the webcast. A couple of questions, actually. Is the price of compassionate use in Germany and other planned EU countries the same as the one applied in France? So the answer is no. The only country where compassionate use is actually generating revenues is France. The other form of either compassionate use or expanded access program for pre-approval drugs is based on a free basis. And there is one last question. On Pioneer, can you share more specifics about the extension cohort, for example, dosing, patient selection, etc.?
Yes, absolutely. So it's a classical dose escalation, first in human study with 3 dose levels. And right now we are about to discuss with the DSMB to choose the best dose for the extension cohort we are recruiting. So it's quite classical, you know, it's a dose ranging. I can share that with you because it has been shared through abstract and so on. There's no safety issue in this trial.
As there are no further questions, I will hand back to your host, Bernard Gilly.
Thank you, Jack. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for attending our webcast. And we look forward for the approval of Lumeval by the end of this year. Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining today's GenSight FY 2020 financial results. You may now disconnect. Hosts, please stay on the line and await further instruction.